Today for our scripture, we're not going to have anybody reading it because we're going to watch exactly the same video that the kids are going to watch today about Joseph's story. So let's take a look.
One night, the Pharaoh had a strange dream and could not sleep. The next morning, he called all his wise men, ministers, and counselors and described his dream to them. Nobody had an answer to what it could mean. When the servant, who was in jail with Joseph, heard about this, he suddenly remembered his promise. He ran to the Pharaoh and told him about the prisoner who could interpret dreams. The Pharaoh immediately summoned Joseph.
"So, my servant says you can interpret dreams. He tells me you are extremely gifted. I am not capable of such things, Your Majesty. My God works through me. He can give you the meaning of your dreams. Describe your dream to me."
"Very well. In my dream, I saw seven fat cows eating grass in a field. Then seven thin, ugly cows rose up from the river Nile and swallowed the seven fat cows. What does this mean?" Joseph listened to the Pharaoh and then closed his eyes for some time. He walked across the room and came back to the Pharaoh.
"My lord, this dream you just described is very symbolic. It is a message from God. God is telling you that a great famine is coming. It will last for 7 years. There will be no food to grow, no rains. A lot of people will starve and die."
"Oh, that is terrible news. We are all doomed then."
"Wait, my lord, I am not finished yet. The dream came to you as a warning from God to prepare for the famine. There will be 7 years of plenty before the famine. So you can store up on food grains and livestock and other supplies during this period. You must make the most of this chance to produce excess food so that you can store it for later."
"Oh, you are right. Thank God I found you. This is great news. We will be prepared for the famine. We will produce plenty of food and build up storages for the difficult times. Thank you, Joseph. You are the most wise man in the kingdom. I am appointing you in charge of overseeing this work."
"Your Majesty, the honor is truly mine. These are not my powers. God speaks through me. I am simply conveying his message to you."
Joseph helped the king to grow extra food grains and build storages during the 7 years of plenty so that people would not starve during the 7 year famine. He was also very popular among the people and earned their love and respect.
There we go. Thank you. All right. And all the people said, amen. Wonderful story. And as we think about Joseph's story, I've been thinking a little bit about it myself. Last week, we had a class on how to listen artfully, especially to people in pain. And we talked a little bit about how sometimes some of the words we say as Christians, they sound good sometimes, but when people are in the pit, they tend to turn people off. They tend to not be helpful. And I thought about this story about Joseph, because Joseph, let's be honest, he's like an ever-ready, you know, bunny. He just jumps up all the time, and he gets in the pit, and he's out. He gets into trouble, and he's out. He just continually seems to find his feet, no matter how he falls. But life, it seems like, me anyway, for some folks, they don't get out of that pit. They have health situations that they're going to be living with the rest of their lives. And how does it feel for them when we say, "Hey, just get up there and life's going to find a new way for you"? Well, that's not as easy as it sounds. So I want to take some time this morning to just share a little bit about what I've learned in my reading and in my studying and my life about how we might reach out to people who are in the pit of their lives right now and may not have a way out, really. One of the videos we watched while we were at the study, I want to have shown, and it's a Brené Brown video. And so what I think we often do as people of God, we're good news people, you know, we like to weave hope into people's lives. So we tend to like to silver line their stories. You know, we say to them, you know, well, I know it's tough, but, you know, remember, you know, you've got good things happening in your life too, right? So we like to get down there, not necessarily go all the way down in the pit with them, but at least reach our brush there and do a little silver lining planning, painting. So this speaks to this. So let's watch this video. It's not very long.
Empathy is feeling with people. And to me, I always think of empathy as this kind of sacred space when someone's kind of in a deep hole and they shout out from the bottom and they say, I'm stuck, it's dark, I'm overwhelmed. And then we look and we say, hey, you climb down. I know what it's like down here. And you're not alone. Sympathy is, ooh, it's bad, uh-huh. No, you want a sandwich? Empathy is a choice, and it's a vulnerable choice, because in order to connect with you, I have to connect with something in myself that knows that feeling. Rarely, if ever, does an empathic response begin with at least. And we do it all the time, because you know what? Someone just shared something with us that's incredibly painful, and we're trying to silver lining it. I don't think that's a verb, but I'm using it as one. We're trying to put the silver lining around it. So I had a miscarriage. Oh, at least you know you can get pregnant. I think my marriage is falling apart. At least you have a marriage. John's getting kicked out of school. At least Sarah is an A student. But one of the things we do sometimes in the face of very difficult conversations is we try to make things better. If I share something with you that's very difficult, I'd rather you say, I don't even know what to say right now, I'm just so glad you told me. Because the truth is, rarely can a response make something better. What makes something better is connection.
I love that line. Rarely can a response or anything we say make things anybody feel better. It's usually the presence and the connection we make. And I think that's so true. And so sometimes we read the Joseph story, and it can sound that way to people in the pit. Just be like Joseph, you know? Have faith. Don't question, and God will get you out of that pit. Except that's just not very helpful to people in the pit. The people that are dealing with that question that never goes away in the pit, and you know the question. They're all asking it, why? Why is this happening to me? Why, God? Philip Yancey, if you've ever read any books by him, he's got some fantastic books, but he's a wonderful Christian writer, and he spent years writing books about this very question, why, God? And his first book that he wrote about this, he was only 27 when he wrote it, and it was called Where is God When It Hurts? And it's sold over like 2 million copies so far. And after the Sandy Hook massacre, the shooting in the school there, he and his publisher offered the book for free online to just that regional area. And he thought, you know, maybe a couple hundred people might, you know, jump on and grab it. No. 150,000 people downloaded that from that one region. People wanted to know, where was God when it hurts? And we want to know that too. Recently, Philip Yancey revisited this first book, and he wrote a sequel called The Question That Never Goes Away, Why? Today, I'm going to segue out of the Joseph story for just a bit to kind of talk about this book. So that we can help people in pain. People like a friend of mine who has a 3-year-old daughter and is terminally ill with cancer. She's not going to be able to see her daughter even get to grade school, let alone high school, and graduate. People who are living with chronic back pain that just won't go away. No matter how many surgeries they've tried, no matter how many yoga classes or back specialists they visited, the pain just is always there. People who have lost loved ones in shootings all over the country in places like Virginia Tech and Sandy Hook and even Arlington, Washington had a shooting. People like the people of Sarajevo, a city who endured the longest military siege in modern history. Over 4 years they were in siege. And who still, almost 30 years later, it's been 30 years since that all happened, and they're still sorting through rubble, finding bodies there. Over 11,000 civilians were killed. Most of them were killed standing in line, waiting for food. Can you imagine how they feel? People like the survivors of the tsunami in Japan in 2011 who still can't sleep at night because of the memories of so many family members who have died. Philip Yancey speaks to these folks. And what I love about Philip Yancey, he's not just writing a book. He's been to all these tragedies. He's been speaking to these people. He's invited to Japan to speak about the tsunami. He's been invited to Virginia Tech to speak to that group of folks who have lost loved ones. And he does just a beautiful job in this book in trying to answer this question for folks in the pit. And you're not going to like his answer. His answer is, you're never going to get an answer. You're never going to get a good one. You may want one. You may want one so bad, an answer to why that's going to explain it all. But he said, he's looked for it for 35 years, and he hasn't found it. He said, there aren't any one answer that's going to fill your hole. That's hard for me, because I've searched in my life for that why answer a lot, too. But he says, sometimes, when we're searching for the why questions so hard, we miss out on where God already is, where love is already trying to reach us. And so he says to us, can you possibly just let the why question go? And he takes Job in the Bible, and he tells the story of Job, and the answer in that book in the Bible, by the way, the Bible asks this question a lot, why? The whole book of Job is that question. And he says that gives the Bible some credibility. You know, what kind of book actually asks the toughest question right there about their God? And that's something about the Bible that the Bible does. But Job, all of the friends who come to him, you remember those great friends that he has? They all come to him. What do? They give him a reason why, right? And they don't even care about him. They just give the reason why. They're just defending God. And so they give the reason why, and it doesn't work for Job, right? Because it doesn't fill the void. It's not a good enough answer. But all those people who are trying to answer the question why don't do the one thing that Job needs. Get down into the pit and just be there with Job. Now, I know we all have people in our lives that are there. Teenagers, grade school, high school, college, 94-year-olds, we all know somebody who's in that pit, and we'd love to rescue them, right? But the hardest thing to do is to get in the pit there with them and just hear their story over and over and over again. And let me tell you, I've been there. They tell the story a lot, right? And you get tired of it because you want to paint silver lining all over it. But just listen, and it will work eventually. I really believe that. It is the most helpful thing we can do, because what does it do? It gives connection. It connects them to somebody, because you know what they believe in that pit? They believe they're the only one there. They believe they're all alone. They've got that lie locked in. But if you can be there with them, that lie starts going away. And they begin to realize, no, they are connected. In this book, Philip Yancey writes, he tells a story about an anthropologist who's trying to tell her understanding of when love or God came into the world, and when she's studying bones. And she said the most important moment she's ever seen in history was when she found a leg bone that was healed. I was thinking about you, Brad, in this as a doctor, and Mimi, you as well, or all of us in the healing profession. But she found a bone way back when that was healed, and she said that is proof that somebody was there taking care of that person. You know, we lived at a long time in this dog-eat-dog world where everybody just went off for themselves. But here in this moment, she said, is the beginning of love entering the world. Healing is where it starts. And we can be a people who can enter a pit where that person is feeling exactly the same way. And when we listen, we begin the healing practice. We begin the healing process. We become God Emmanuel in that moment. And so I want to invite you for that piece of things, right? One of the first things we can do when trying to answer the where is God or why is God is we can be God without saying anything. Just using our loving attention, giving that person all the love we can by listening. Philip Yancey goes on to talk about Hurricane Katrina. And he said he had a friend who gave up his faith in the Christian walk because he just got so tired of all the words. You know, he just got tired of, you know, hearing all this stuff and not really feeling like God was there. But he decided, he worked for Sunday morning, or he worked for 60 Minutes. And so he wrote a book where for 2 years, he decided he was going to investigate the Christian church. And with a very skeptical eye, I might add, because he had already lost his faith, but he was trying to open it up again. And he said he found it at Hurricane Katrina. Because he said that was a place where our government just fell apart and disappointed the whole region. They were so disappointed in our government and what we were doing. And yet church after church, religious organization after religious organization sent groups down there, and they just kept coming and giving and taking care and giving everything they could. So many different churches. I've been there down there 2 times. I know some of you probably have been there too. But that movement where the church wasn't word but was deed, was people doing the work, doing the love, that was what changed his heart and mind. And he went on to say that when we see someone in the pit, it's rarely the words or the scriptures or the sermons that will help. Here I am giving a sermon. It's almost always the humbled heart willing to climb down in the pit with them, the ears listening with full attention, and hands and feet willing to be with them, fully present, a ministry of deed. A ministry of deed. That, he said, will transform this world. Our deeds is what transforms the world. Now, I have an uncle, not with us anymore, but Uncle George was a World War II vet, and he was a Korean War vet, and he was one tough, whatever you want to call him, he was a tough guy. He did not like church. He never went to church. And he didn't go to church because he said, hey, without me as a soldier, we wouldn't be here today. It's the soldiers of this world who really saved the world. Church doesn't do anything, is what he had in his background. He never said that to my dad, however, who was a pastor. But that's what he had in his head. And he was this guy that just, I'm going to do it. You know, if something happens, I'm going to do it. And it worked pretty good until he got like 75. And he got emphysema because he smoked too many cigars. And he just had a hard time breathing. And then a big hurricane came through South Carolina, knocked, he had quite a big property, knocked over 100 trees, knocked down all the electrical lines there. And he called my dad. I remember the call because I could hear him. And he was almost in tears saying, I don't know what I'm going to do. I can't even do this kind of work. I can't even operate a chainsaw anymore. And he was just beside himself. And that next morning, a Hutterite group came, a group of Christians, a Hutterite colony that was from Tennessee, had traveled there, and they started working on his yard. They started cutting down trees. They even built a ramp for him and my aunt to walk up and down. And all Uncle George could do was sit there and watch. And it was driving him crazy. And for 3 days, that crew worked there. And finally, they came to the door, knocked on the door, and they said, we'd love a prayer for you. And Uncle George said, what do you mean, have a prayer? He said, you've been the prayer. You've lived the prayer. That's all I needed. That next Sunday, Uncle George in church. Now that was a miracle. And that is what a ministry of deed will do. May we here at Bear Creek learn words are important, yes, but deeds 10 times as powerful. All the people said,